You're listening to DMT. Dimitri Mujanis talks.
Welcome to DMT. I'm your host, Dimitri Mujanis. Today's guest is Lex Pelger. Lex is a writer and scientist. He wrote the graphic novel about cannabinoids based on Moby Dick called The People of the Cannabinoids. He's also the science director at Bluebird Botanicals. We talk about weed, life, and philosophy. We call this episode, Get Your Granny High. I'm here with Lex. Lex, I've known you for many years, and I consider you a brother, but I have no idea what your last name is.
Lex Pelger, old Dutch name.
Pelger. Mm-hmm. It's Dutch.
I'm very Dutch.
So you actually come from Pennsylvania, Dutch country, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us your little bio.
I came from Pennsylvania, Dutch country. So I grew up in the church, and so it kind of flavored my thinking a lot. And so then I got to college and I got into mushrooms and just had kind of the natural path. It's not even a particularly exciting story. It's just how so many people experience them. And so then eventually, like, the science of what was happening with these drugs really got interesting to me. And then I started to realize that the most scientific thing about psychedelics is the stories we tell. In terms of data and what we're actually learning, you know, you talk to a couple dozen people about what a psychedelic experience was them, what it was like for them, it means a hell of a lot more than killing a bunch of thousands of mice and seeing what's happening on the neurotransmitter level. And I love that work, and it's really important, but it feels so odd to be in an age where anecdotal data has these, quote, air marks around them as very much lesser data, like not even worth 10%, when so much of human health and healing is in stories that don't chart very well. Yeah, I think the secret's in the stories, especially with drugs.
Right on. I couldn't disagree with any of that. I want to go back to church. What church did you grow up in?
Church of the Brethren. And so it's a little bit like Mennonite Light. You know, there's Amish, and then there's Mennonites, and then there's Brethren. And within that, there's dozens of different churches and belief structures that sometimes hinge on the smallest things, like whether you tie your bonnet when you go into church or not. And it's just such a human thing. I see it in the psychedelic community. It's in all communities. You know, it's a sociobiology idea that you kill your cousins. You know, the people right next to you doing the same kind of things, like, that's where the infighting is, with people in vastly different worlds.
So the Church of the Brethren, you kill your cousins? Is that what you're saying?
It is like anything. There is, yeah.
So you mentioned bonnets. So, like, I'm like a Greek boy from Detroit, like, spent 40 years in New York. When I hear fucking Pennsylvania Dutch and bonnets, you mean literally bonnets?
I mean, yeah, the old style head coverings, because women should keep their heads covered.
They certainly should, because God hates that shit.
Actually, it's actually, if you're like my father and take the approach he thinks what it really was more honoring to the women.
How so?
You'd have to ask him.
Okay.
But that's, my father's the smartest Christian I know, and so I...
He sent me his book about Christian sex, which
Great Sex Christian Style?
I want to read that.
It's a winner of a title.
But, like, I started reading it, it's not how to fuck Christian girls. That's what I thought it was about. I thought it was a how-to book. But I want to get into
it. It's how to have sex.
And how to have sex,
you don't need
Christian
that one.
Style, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's the kinkiest shit I can think of, right? It's like when your masturbation time fucking overlaps with your Bible time, right? Yeah. Okay.
Son of Solomon.
So you grew up in the Church of the Brethren. Was it like real? Like, I think of that, like, you know, like, there's bonnets. Like, I mean, was it really a repressive type of church, or?
It really wasn't. It was just very, very much going for normalcy. If you want to have a nice, quiet, simple life without a bunch of confusion and contradictions and such, like, it's beautiful for that. I got to see what small town religion does and is good for all over the world. And I happen to see it here in the United States with a Christian group. But, like, mostly people just got together, they had an excuse for getting together, they had an excuse to argue a little bit, but be a big family with some infighting, but a good thing. Then I went to India and I lived in a slum, and it was mostly Muslims. And I saw the exact same things of people living together and just enjoying their religion as, like, one more thing to fiddle with.
You know what? It's so great to be sitting, like, in the epicenter of fucking liberalism, really neoliberalism, downtown Manhattan, in this neighborhood that used to be so beautiful and filled with heroin and all other, you know, girls selling pussy on the street. And
I digressed. But and you talking about the beauty of religion, the necessity of storytelling as opposed to a reductionist, you know, linear way of viewing the world. So much of what we hear in liberal circles or progressive circles, or at least if we don't hear it, we feel it, is there's a hostility or at most a tolerance of religion. And I've, you know, as someone who is, you know, a Christian, who is a Buddhist, who practices a religion, I find it really refreshing to hear you say that, because I don't think that the world's problems are brought on by religion. I think religion is an excuse for you know, real estate and oil wars. But what you're describing is my experience with small groups. So how does that translate into psychedelia and cannabis? How does this, or does it at all, this community, this small townness, this I don't know if small townness is actually a thing.
No, that's just the noun we're looking for, and it's what I think when you get down to the trickiest part about drugs, it's how to actually regulate them. Not like, oh, there should be free, like, who gets them, how much, what times. And I think those questions come down to something like church and community, a community kind of use, because you see the cannabis world as money gets involved and how it just gets, you know, more gross and ugly and disgusting. But there will be a Budweiser of pot, and that's fine. There has to be. But if we can write the laws so there's a bigger niche carved out for the local craft people, that would be a good use of the law. It's not easy to do. As there's a bigger, even bigger niche carved out for spiritual sacramental use. Like, you can't prohibit anyone from doing anything, but you can use laws as openings that might be wider than they otherwise would. What about a tax break if you use your weed spiritually and you only give it away? You pay no taxes if, you know, you only give away your drugs. Maybe that's the way to write a law. I'm not the expert on that, but the idea of smaller groups are nicer. Humans are kind of wired for 30 to 75 people. And weed collectives are a nicer thing to do than Budweiser of weed. But
I mean, I think what regulation and law will probably do, because the people writing it are the people who've written all the laws. And, you know, I'm not big on laws, but let's say that, you know, let's say that we have to have them, and I don't think we do. And let's say, well, we're in the epoch of laws, right? So, you know, what I see is the exact opposite happening. Or am I wrong? Am I just viewing the world through an anarchist? What's the opposite of rose-colored glasses?
Shite-colored spectacles.
Shit-colored spectacles. Do you know of cannabis, where cannabis is taking that direction, where there are laws to keep it small?
Yeah, and it actually is exactly what your answer to it. The best cannabis communities, in a lot of ways, are the ones that are not a blind turn of the eye to the communities. Amsterdam, there's no laws for how this plant is being made. The storefronts, there are laws for. The back end of where this miracle weed comes from, with no legislation, it's one of the best. In Spain, there's not any legal stuff going on. The cops just aren't busting the Spanish collectives that are medical and just getting people together. In London, it's about just allowing. You try to regulate, and of course the legislator is known next to nothing. The regulators usually tend to know a little bit more, but they're hampered by the laws that got written.
So you're not talking about America, right? You're talking about countries.
Well, even America, the best places was Humboldt, you know, Humboldt back in the day when it was, you know, some wild, wild west. Yeah, some more.
I agree with you. But yeah. But like, what's that? I mean, what I see now happening is it's just up to the good graces of the local police, you know? Yeah. And that also, you know, we know how that plays out. It's going to play out definitely in terms of race and class and accessibility to influence, cultural capital.
Yeah.
Can you think of Humboldt? Talk about Humboldt before, like, talk about Humboldt 10 years ago and talk about Humboldt now. Not that I know much about
it. I don't know enough about the comment on it, but going back to what you, but I'll finish at it maybe. Going back to what you said about, you know, what, you know, having the cops change the perception. Not far from here, Harry Levine of Brooklyn is a great researcher on drug laws and racism, how they actually play out versus what the lawmakers might have been hoping to have happen. And he always asks his freshmen, they're coming in, you know, how long have weed been decriminalized in New York City? And it turns out it's been it's been 20 or 30 years. Yeah. And it's still it's still been the arrest capital of the entire country with some of the most liberal laws. And his idea is it's all drug politics is local. It's a cultural thing. And it's not about writing better laws or better regulations to change people's behaviors. It's about that's just the starting point. Telling the story to cops about how this is a medicine, about how this is a spiritual experience. It's not easy to do, but missionary work never is. And that's how you change hearts and minds, is by telling stories. You do your best at the law level. But
I agree with you with the stories, and I just want to go back to, you know, sort of a, I think that, you know, bringing up, you know, New York City as the worst place for cannabis users and smokers in terms of arrests. I mean, if you look at it on paper, you have the most liberal population, the most progressive population in the United States. Almost, you know, I don't know what the percentage is. A lot of people smoked weed before, right? I think that what we can tell the story, it's been decriminalized for decades, but I think what it comes up with in New York, as we sit on this very valuable piece of real estate right now, is real estate. And these progressives and these liberals don't mind having Rikers Island, which they call the Gladiator School, just right off the shore, where right off the right off the East River there, and the biggest, the highest rate of arrest, as long as their real estate values stay high. And they don't care about black and brown and poor people. They don't care about black and brown people, and they hate poor white people. So for me, it's not a really great story, because I think most beat cops would know that weed is pretty fucking harmless. I don't think they got a thing in for weed, but they know that they have to defend property. Well, maybe they don't even know, but their job is to defend capital. And we're inserting this in capital. Who's being interviewed here? Is it me?
And it brings up one of the best things that happened at the Horizons conference this weekend was Nick Powers.
Nick Powers,
which
is fucking
everybody
awesome.
Can watch online. And he really, it was a beautiful piece of being a prophet, about race and about telling his own story and challenging the psychedelic community to not be so white, to actually write the research proposals about using psychedelics for trauma, generational trauma, or for the effects of institutionalized racism, or for being in the prison industrial complex, and told to, you know, imagine a world if this is how you work with someone after they come out of prison, is you give them MDMA and they have to go talk to the people that they harmed to get in prison. And that's more important than them being alone for 10 years. It's them seeing someone else. And that's incredibly hard, messy things to do. And there's nothing that white liberals fear more than messiness. You don't want to get down the dirt of this thing. Oh yeah, no, I don't believe in racism. I just happen to have no friends of color. You know,
except for Maria, who cleans the house.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and takes care of the kids. Yeah. This is the conversation, and I think even I don't want to say one level deeper, but another level is, you know, no one wants to address the fucking economic system that produces this, that racism feeds into, that we need race and a division in order to keep it going. And I think, you know, this is, you know, you brought it up. Is there some place in the country where you see folks trying to keep cannabis local? And then I want to get off of this and get into more of your own work. But do you see some place where people are fighting to keep cannabis local, fighting to keep cannabis small?
Yeah, I think Colorado, of all these state institutions going on, Colorado does have some of those same things going on, where they're just treating it like one more thing that can be a recreational intoxicant, it can be an industrial product, or it can be grandma's medicine, and there's laws written for that different part of it. A guy in Colorado actually pointed out to me that there's 18 different licenses for having alcohol at an event or on a premises, and that's a lot of creative thinking. Booze can be like this, 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 or this, depending on the context. And it takes that much experience with weed. And my big fear is when the feds go legal however they will, there's all these states that they could replicate. And there's Colorado, which is pretty, you know, fucked up in all kinds of ways, like anything is, but I think one of the best things we have going on. Then there's Washington State, which is probably the worst example of states going legal, because a bunch of white guys with suits who don't smoke the medicine are making money on the west half of the state. And on the east half of the state, and this comes from a real angry lawyer I know who was there, it's like black kids and brown kids are getting busted the exact same rates they ever were before this drug became legal. And there's nothing about reparation, like exonerations for people who are in for it right now, while the bank's being made on the west side. And that's so obviously how the U.S. government could do this in the next 5 or 10 years. Awful, racist, and the problem is, quote unquote, solved. What do you mean go back to that weed thing? We solved weed, now white people can buy it. And it's taxed, so everybody's happy. We'll just not look at the black and brown thing that continues to go on and just matches every other part of society. And that's probably how it's going to go.
Well, I think that's how psychedelics are going to go, too. I don't see it as... And at best, that's how it'll go. At worst, it'll be used as a tool for racist capitalism, which I think is the way psychedelics is going. They want to make you... So you're okay with this bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, take the blue pill so you're okay with it.
Yeah.
You mentioned Granny. Granny smokes pot. I know that's one of your things is grannies, right?
I like to sit at the feet of the elderly. Or whatever.
Why do you think cannabis is for old people?
The science behind that is immense. I mean, it's years of reading just to get the basics of it. But that's not what convinces people. Everyone thinks science convinces them, but they don't want to listen more a paragraph at a cocktail party. Believe you me. But the stories I get to see of elderly people, really anyone over 50, CBD specifically can be such a great boon and tonic for, because it helps so much with all the neurodegenerative diseases. It works particularly well against lots of autoimmune disorders like Crohn's, arthritis, MS, where the body's attacking both the brain and the body. It grows new bone cells for elderly women, because all women have osteoporosis. And then I hear stories over and over again of people taking a bunch of pharmaceuticals and then they get on CBD and they throw out most or all of those. That's the good side. Now that I'm working for a CBD company, I like to talk about the bad side a lot more. Mm-hmm. The one harm reduction thing I always have to say is, if you're taking statins, that cholesterol medication, or any other medication where your doctor tells you not to be drinking lots of grapefruit juice, you should be very, very careful. Probably not use CBD, because it shuts down, both grapefruit juice and CBD shut down the same liver enzyme, CYP450. That's really important for processing drugs, clearing them out of your system. And so if you shut that down, things like statins can, it's not a good combination.
Okay.
That's one.
What about smoking? I mean, does that...
Smoking pot?
Does that affect statins or whatever the fuck that is?
I don't think that much, because most pot that you're smoking will have so little CBD in it that, you know.
So, you know, just to give a narrative that you know, I'm going to out my mother. I hope she doesn't... Now she's so fucking paranoid about it. She's an old lefty. Not that old, Mom, but my, not that old. If I saw how old she was, I'd be a real shit. And so she's paranoid about this stuff, but she's got a license to smoke. My mother, who is getting up there, I won't say how old she is, had arthritis, and I had you talk to her, and she went from CBD oils to now she's on the vape. The thing is, yesterday I had to give her a tutorial on how to fucking inhale, because she sits down with a vape and takes 15 hits. I'm like, Mom, either you're like, you know, like one of the Indian gurus that took LSD and didn't feel shit, or like when Ginsberg gave a Thelonious Monk acid right from fucking Leary, and like came back 2 hours later and he's like, what was that shit? Like, no phase. Like, my mom's sitting there like this. You know, so I don't think she's smoking it right, or maybe, man, she's so out already. So I was giving her a tutorial, and I said, this might be a good... This could be something we could do, like senior tutorials and how to get high. But my mom is able to sleep now.
That's right.
And she never smoked weed, you know, in her life.
Yeah.
And she's open to it, and it's just really changed her life. She's able to get... Before, she couldn't get more than 3 hours of sleep, which is torture. Now she's sleeping 8 hours, which I think is amazing. That brings me to something else, though, that I maybe like you to comment on. It's like, once we legalize this stuff and it becomes part of... it becomes a product, it becomes commodified, it's going to be sold as a commodity probably within the next 10 years... It becomes wholesome, grannies smoke it. It loses its transgressive qualities. And I'm wondering what is lost in when we lose that transgressive quality.
Well, you're the expert on transgressions. I'm the grandma preacher.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a really important part. Actually, Martin Lee has a beautiful passage in his book about pot, his social history, Smoke Signals. And he talks about the importance of the 60s and 70s when it was a way to find the others with a capital O.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you get it from a dispensary, there's not that camaraderie around it anymore. And that was a really beautiful thing. And I wasn't in that much. You know, I'm not that social a smoker as far as things go. I'm more of a, I'm more of a pragmatist with drugs in general. And so for me, there's absolutely this trade-off of it being an important thing to make you more outside the system and to realize that these are just boxes they're putting around themselves. But on the flip side, anything that, A, keeps people out of prison for something that's obviously legal, and maybe just as importantly, healing our grandparents and the deeply traumatized souls with the ease that these drugs can be, like the more that it's out there completely, you know, and even as a harm reductionist, these drugs need to be out there with almost no restrictions. If you can sell alcohol at most bodegas, you can sell any other intoxicating substance almost. I mean, you have to be reasonable. But
you can buy a gun and alcohol in the same place in some parts. You know?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, it's awesome.
And that's why, what are you waiting period? I'm angry now.
Exactly.
Homer J. Simpson. Yeah. Well, we tried and we failed. The lesson is, never try.
Yeah, but there's still something lost. I mean, I'm feeling
it's true. It's true.
I'm feeling that with what I call the gentrification of heroin. You know, heroin's become gentrified. Back in the day, like if you were like in this neighborhood 30 years ago, 35 years ago, there would be motherfuckers reading books waiting for dope. You know, so like you could see each other, right? And like now, it's like a new level of shame for my addiction. I don't want to be associated with these fucks. You know what I mean? You know, they come in and ruin everything, man. They ruin heroin. You're talking about where you work now. Where do you work now? First of all, congratulations on having a job.
Cheers, thanks.
I think it's a good thing.
Actually,
right?
Yeah, I didn't know 9 to 5 could be
where
like
do you
this.
Work?
Bluebird Botanicals, good CBD company out of Colorado,
okay.
Local hemp. Yeah, and it's a personally, it's surprising to know that a 9 to 5 can be so good. I really like the people, and I've only been there a couple weeks. They give away product like crazy. Any veterans listening, just send in any kind of proof, 25% discount, good for life. We have coupons for people on disability, for people on low income. Send in the proofs, we'll send you back a coupon that'll just get you, it's not a medicine, it's a dietary supplement. We will give you no medical advice. And that's what works the best. Like, I tell people, you want to know about CBD or any of these drugs? Read online what other patients are saying. I'm going to tell you the downsides because no one tells you the slight bits of harm reduction around CBD, like sleep. You know, it affects everybody's sleep differently. And so for some people, it wakes them up. For your mom, it puts her to sleep. Others, it doesn't affect your sleep at all. But you have to know yourself. And something I always hear from you about this paradigm of the medical establishment and the idea that's like, take this pill and just take it. Don't think about it. With weed, any version of weed specifically, you have to know yourself. Everyone's endogenous cannabinoid system is so different that you can't just take a weed pill, take this strain, take this thing. You have to pay attention, maybe keep a journal, maybe just think about it more and realize what works for you, which is a great thing to teach an elderly person who's been trained by themselves and doctors to just do certain things. Instead, it's like, no, you will figure this out. And I'm not great at this. I'm great at instructing people on this, which means I'm not very good at doing it myself. But yeah, it's an important thing to teach someone is how much I can pay attention to my own body better and get in touch with something.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's, there's so much in what you just said. And as they say on podcasts, it's a lot to unpack there, Lex. I just got to say that. So all this, you just came from the Horizons Conference, which was, you know, increasingly heavily on research, right? All the psychedelic conferences are about research these days. I mean, that's why I haven't been asked to speak at one in a long time.
I never will be either.
And you probably never will be either. But, so, I agree with you that the story propels, but the thing about research and the thing about so-called science and the thing about medicalization is it will take over whatever whatever there is to take over. It will occupy the space, and it will become the ultimate truth. One size fits all, which I think is one of the issues with, you know, Ibogaine. You know, one size fits all. Like, you go take this pill. That's what researchers are into. They're not into messy. They're not into individualization. They're not into individuals. They're not into story. They're into, like, this cold fact, which becomes the official truth. Is there anything? We used to think that taking the drugs would prevent that. Now we're being told by the people that never had the good drugs, and I think it's actually for all these fucking nerds, right? It's their chance to have the good drugs. These motherfuckers that never got nothing, you know, no pussy, no ass, whatever you're into, no dick, right? Now they got all the good drugs, right? But anyways, I'm digressing. Is it possible? What do we do to keep it free?
Act like it's free.
Basi.
Your anarchism is so inspiring. I mean, it will be coming out in this medical legal framework, and it's punching above my weight for me to think about changes to that. But
we're actually in the park here, and the guy's having us move along, and he's really nice. He saw that we were talking, and he's going to have to clear up the table. So we're going to just move. Are we going to cut it, or are we just going to move to the next spot?
We're going to cut it.
I think that the anarchism that you preach is so important, because this medical legal model and how it's going to come out, I can make suggestions about that, but it's punching above my weight to think about how that might be changed overall. The thing all of us can do right now is do the drugs exactly like you want to see them done, like people have been doing for 50 years, 2,000 years, is whatever the laws say, keep doing the drugs in your own spaces, in your own spots. Use the dark web to acquire these drugs. Make your own rituals. Make your own parties. Make your own brain hacking stuff to do the good that agrees with you, and act like these drugs are legal. Tell other people that these drugs are legal. You know, be honest. You know, come out of the closet is one of the most important things. And that means whatever that means challenging to you. There's some people you don't want to tell. Maybe it's parents, maybe it's farther out than that, but the more people you tell, you know, to come back to the church. I did a little bit of Christian missionary work when I was a kid. I'm not proud of the fact that I went to Nepal to tell Buddhists that their 5,000-year-old religion wasn't it, and my 2,000-year-old religion was it, but we're all young and make mistakes. Now I'm preaching a peer-reviewed religion, you know? Mushrooms are actually, they're science with the thing I'm preaching. But there's a Christian idea from research they did about it takes 7 touches to convert someone. You know, hearing about the good news. And you never know on a journey that you might be the first person to ever mention DMT or mushrooms to a cop or a legislator or a teacher. And they don't say anything and they might act against it. But they go home and they look it up on the internet and they hear the quote from the right kind of, and the internet gives them what they need. I magically found this piece of information that is exactly in my kind of style because it was a TED Talk, or as Terrence, or it was a scientist in a lab coat, whoever you like and respect. And then it takes them to the next step. And, or maybe you'll be the 7th step when you tell them that. It could be true.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
The 80s. I've been sitting here since the 80s.
Sometimes you need someone to spin a giant cube above your head and knock you out of your reality. But you never know when your truth, you telling your story, wherever, writing it down to yourself, putting it on a podcast, telling someone at a park bench that this thing changed your life. Could be the drugs, could be one of your other practices. And it puts them right on that step. Or it keeps just blowing wind. It's just like advertising. A famous advertising exec said, "I know that I'm wasting half of our budget. I just don't know which half." And that's your words. That's all you can do is share them, and if you don't like it, well, be like Dimitri.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that. Be like you. As Dolly Parton said, find out who you are.
Find out who
and
the
then
fuck
do
you are.
That.
Yeah. And look what I do, and don't do that. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Is the 8th step, the 7th step is baptism, the 8th step is kill them and take their land, right? Is that the Christian touch,
if you,
7 touches?
Yeah.
The 8th touch is a
if
bitch.
If you see the Buddha
you were
on the
missionary?
Road, kill him.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that. So you went around killing Buddhas? You
with kindness. Actually, but yeah. By listening to their stories.
How
you convert anyone.
I never knew you were a missionary.
I'm not proud of it. Yeah.
I love that. Hello.
I don't want to interfere.
Well, you are, but it's okay.
Well, I know you, but are you guys going to go to the Bushwick party?
I gotta go pick up baby stuff.
Do you think it's gonna be at all anything?
Yeah, it'll be cool. I hear from everyone's going. Okay. It'll be more of the. Do you like kibitzing?
Kibitzing?
Yeah.
He's from Pennsylvania.
It'll be more of that.
As close as anything. He left New York, so he'll never get back.
I'm better at kvetching than I am at kvetching.
Kvetching.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's going to be in.
We'll figure a way.
Yeah. Readers are terrible at pronunciation. Whenever I hear people mispronounce lots of words, I'm like, oh, you spend more time alone reading books than you do talking to people. That's good.
I think it was about your waspiness that, like, that was, you'll never be able to get that off your lips.
Ask how he reads the books.
Huh?
Ask how Lex reads books.
Thank you for that. Lex, how do you read books?
Hey, you have an interesting way of how you tag each so you don't forget the books. You highlight the best of his statements in them. You leave your little tags in the book. So each book is like its own memory or its own photograph.
Yeah, I just realized around college I just started writing my notes in the back of the books and with the page numbers, and rewriting quotes was a good way to just get into my head and get some muscle memory with it. But then the longer you did it, the more it kind of became a memory palace. And I built one on the computer that I would put all of the topics that interest me in science or drugs or religion, but especially a general knowledge one. So like everything I've ever read about hacking or chess or Crowley and all the quotes are in one place, and you can always go and just hit the memory cue one more time. Once you remember something 6 times, then it should be on the tip of your tongue. And there's actually an incredible book on Audible that's free about memory from 50 years ago that just is attention and awareness. And more about you are in this space and you try to wrap the tags around this memory on it, the deeper it becomes. And it's like, there's no magic rituals here of like Giordano Bruno making a giant memory palace of your gods. Like, that's one part of it, but it's also just working your memory. Like, you have two little helpers called attention and awareness that sit on your shoulders, and you work with them, you train them, you remember your day, you remember facts, and it then they get easier at the things, and the patterns start to get repetitive. Annie Dillard, who I think is one of the smartest thinkers of the last century and one of the great nature writers, her book A Pilgrim at Tinker's Creek, where she spent 2 years on her property just looking at nature, and it's incredible, and combining all of the old reading and all of the science and all of her observation, this beautiful poetry of thinking. And she said, if you can't see the forest, then look at the trees. Look at enough trees, then you've got something. And I think there's something to that, about constantly rehashing what you've done in your head. C.S. Lewis said, real readers reread. And I don't have time to reread all the books, but I can go through the notes at least once. And the really good books I'll reread, but some books maybe twice in my life, I'll pick them up. I'll read them once, and then I'll look at the notes once, and I'll digitize the notes once. And that's as many touches as they get. If the fact doesn't stick after that long, it wasn't a fact.
That's amazing. I think one of the things that I can thank drugs for the most is that I don't remember decades. I have no idea. I could read a book today that I read 3 months ago and it's brand fucking new. I could grow up with you, like been to every one of your fucking birthday parties from 1 to 12, and I don't know who the fuck you are. And every day is fucking brand new. And as I see, like, it's in my family, like pieces of my brain are falling out my ear. I'm really grateful for it. But
I think it was Voltaire who said, the secret to happiness is an excellent selective memory.
Oh, I got that. But I can always hold on to resentments, which is really nice. Talk about your book, man. Talk about your book.
I'm doing a Moby Dick pot book series. Because,
of course.
Because I started looking
because at... Because of the demand, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's nice to...
What do you mean a Moby Dick pot book series?
It does...
Stop. You have to fucking explain that a little bit.
Well, I mean, the best part about basing your book on a book that was famous for not selling the author's lifetime is that there's always the hope that it will...
You got it. It's okay. You got it. We got it. We're going to duck.
We're under... You're getting hit by a giant cube in New York. You're not paying attention.
Now, this is a really great visual for radio. Can you talk about your book as this giant metal cube?
Absolutely. And I can talk about it in a box with a fox. The Moby Dick Pot Book series is fun because I started doing something about weed, and I didn't... My hubris is, I said, I'll write my first book about weed, because you have to have a first book, and, you know, what do I do? Take 6 months, get it done? How hard could it be? I didn't know anything. You know, I knew who Jack Hare was, I didn't know what anandamide was, and now my entire book is a search for my great white whale, which is anandamide, which is the first neurotransmitter we found that is a cannabinoid in our brain. Just like we have our endorphins, which are simply morphine that we use for pain in our brains and bodies that we use, anandamide is so widespread. It's as widespread as serotonin or dopamine. It's as important as any of these sexy neurotransmitters you heard about. But it's a fat, it's a lipid, and it's all over the place. We have receptors all over the top parts of our brain, on every organ in the body. It ties together the hormonal system with the neuronal system, with the immune system somehow. And the science of it is so fascinating. My metaphor to help explain all of its deep biochemical complexities is the human brain is like an ocean in terms of we know so little about it. We know some of the fish that live in the sea. We know a little bit how they live, interact, and make love, but not that much. And so the drama of this is it's like we found this whale in the depths of our brain swimming around. It turns out there's millions of them, and they have politics and government and religion and all of these different things they do, and that's the complications. And the fascinating part is the brain and the ocean are kind of on similar levels of discovery at this point in human science, where like they didn't get any serious study really till 100 years ago, and then each decade there's some giant discovery about the currents of the ocean or how a neurotransmitter works. You know, is it one big blob, the whole brain, or is it soup versus spark? Is it neurotransmitters versus or electricity? And the answer to all the science questions keeps coming back to, oh, it's both. You know, is it a particle or a wave? It's both. Is it soup or it's spark? It's both. You know, it's, you know, of course. It's what, and so the fun part about anandamide and the endocannabinoid system is it's the body's balance system. It's the body's homeostasis system, and it's why weed can work so well for so many physiological body systems, because it takes a liver cell that's acting up, kidney cell or heart cell or brain cell, and it calms it down. You know, in the brain, it actually does retrograde transmission, which means the signal is going back to the neuron ahead of it. Usually it's sending forward chemical neurotransmitters like serotonin or oxytocin, saying, doing things. Anandamide actually goes backwards and tells the neuron in front of it to calm down, which is a rare thing. We didn't even know the brain did that until within 20 years or so. And so it's a fascinating system, and all the complications of the sea, the more I study the ocean, the more it seems exactly like the human brain, and the metaphor just builds itself so naturally, because as above, so below. It's obvious.
Yeah, that's obvious. Well, I'm going to thank you for that. So we're in this epoch. I know it's... We're under this cube. I want to take a picture.
We're in the Aeon of Osiris with the black cube with a hole in the middle.
It's a microphone in there. Okay. So, we're in this epoch, right, of I don't know what. I mean, we're fucked. Huh? Are we fucked? No, we're not fucked.
We're exactly as fucked as we've always been.
You think so?
Which is a lot.
Huxley
said, it's not that, of course, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it, but those who do know history are doomed to watch other people repeat it.
I see.
It's, you know, you, my father, the wisest Christian I know, and the author of the forthcoming Great Sex Christian Style, he said that life is a lot like camping, and you're not put here to, you know, to go build a giant log cabin in the middle of the woods or something. You're just here to do your little bit of work. You leave the campsite better than you found it. You fix the you build a wood pile, you fix the rocks around the circle. You have your own work to do. And you can spin your wheels getting real mad about politics, but if you don't actually get involved, you're just blowing hot air. It's about finding some work that makes your little bit of difference. It might be that the small victories are the most important ones. A chest full of tiny medals that say, I wasn't a jerk to my partner today. And I swallow. He says that the key to good relationships is swallowing 5 or 6 things that you want to say every day.
That's beautiful. I think you're right. I think we've always been at the point. We've always been at the point that the best thing to do is to be a good human being as best we can. You know, I was working with someone recently, really recently, and, you know, after, you know, facilitating a session with them, they said, I asked them how they were, they said they were okay. And I think okay is great. I think that, like, my work with psychedelics, I've said it many times, is to be a little less of an asshole. And when people ask me about, you know, what anarchism is, I said, well, you can start with please or thank you. And if you have a weekly or a monthly MetroCard, swipe someone in. And then go from there. Let that sort of be the ruler or the template for the way you behave in the world. And so I agree that I think what's important is we pretend they don't exist. Yeah. And then when we see that it's odious, we work together to change it.
Yeah. I think it's important to pretend to yourself in some way too. Like you said about being psychedelics teaching you to be a little bit less of an asshole. I used that line a couple of times around my godmother and her coven of old ladies to tell me what to do, and she said, they actually all said, you can't call yourself an asshole anymore. You shouldn't use that verbiage about yourself, because the stories you tell really do have an importance. I was being flippant and making a good joke, I thought, that I stole from you, which I think are some of my best jokes, and I luckily forget it. Psychedelics helped me to unlock a little bit of this, like, Puritan Pennsylvania thing of, like, having to earn it, and just from being able to say it out loud to myself, like, no, I'm doing okay. I'm doing fine here. Like, yeah, I could have done better here, but trying to keep the narrative a little bit more positive.
Yeah.
Not too much, but
well,
enough.
No, I get you. I was, you know, making bad jokes, too, and, like, if a bunch of old ladies in a covenant say I was fucked up, I'm a fuck up, okay? I fucked up. I'm sorry.
They love you, though.
Sorry.
They don't even know you, and they love you.
I'm sure they do.
Actually, Ia knows you. She does love you.
I don't want to be in any sort of spiritual group unless it's old ladies. There's a child here, so I can't really go into this whole detail of what I wanted to say to close up the show. Hello, sir. How are you? Good. Okay.
Good voice.
Anyways, kid stepped on my line. Anyway.
But
basically, I don't want to be. Hey, help this kid move this. There we go. I think he's doing most of the work.
Oh yeah, he's doing all the work. He's got it.
So we lost him.
Great.
Mighty man, mighty hero.
There's a metaphor in there. Don't you worry. It's right on the inside. Looks like a Trojan horse.
Anyway. Thanks so much, bro.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, we don't have a name for the show. If you could come up with a suggestion, I know I'm putting you on the spot. If not,
D-cast, D-holes, D-hole. D-shot.
D-shot.
Shot, D-shot.
D-shot.
D-something, D-planing, D, the opposite of something. D-cortical, what do you, to take the center out of a cannabis plant, D-cortically, D, something, D-cortic.
I gotta be able to remember it.
Yeah. Well, work with me here. D something.
D,
what do you want to do?
What do I do?
D long.
My name starts with
D-clawing.
Alliteration is fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, no, that's how I'm a Melillion. You use a bunch of same letters in the row, so the magic just went in my brain.
But this is like, you know, when I was a kid trying to come up with names for, like, you know, bands. So, like, I'm just sitting at home.
Decluttering.
It's
hot now.
Defocus.
Defocus.
Well, we'll
defocus.
Defocus.
Yeah.
Defocus.
Alan Watts had the best autobiography title. In My Own Way. Or In My Own Way. Or
Right.
D something.
D, I like it. Okay.
Yeah. D something.
All right.
D something?
D something.
D something.
D whatever? No.
Yeah.
D,
all right. Well, D-shot. Is there anything you want to leave us with?
Talk to your grandparents about pot.
I see. Talk to your grandparents about pot. Steal your granny's stash.
They might be waiting to hear about it. Ever since that nice young doctor on television said positive things about pot, you never know when suggesting some kind of whatever that works for them. Just bring the joint over, bring the edible, bring the CBD bottle. Don't ask them if they want to try it.
The edible's a little bit tricky, though.
You don't want to
be giving them a brownie and have your grandmother.
Microdose old people. Yeah. In every way you introduce them, give them microdoses.
Don't tell them. How about that?
No, always tell them.
They're old.
Oh my God! Yes, so you're the worst anarchist. Anarchists are positivists.
That's
think
true.
People can do their own thing.
I'm sorry. Yeah, tell
old
people.
You should get kicked out of the anarchist club.
Have you ever read the book, the short story, The Anarchist Convention?
I sent it.
No,
to
you sent it to me. You gave it to me. It's one of the best things I've ever heard. I listen to it every so often.
Dastardly Dimitri.
And turn kids on,
donkey,
too.
Donkey Dilemma.
Turn kids on.
That should be the name of the show.
What?
Dastardly Dimitri's Donkey Dilemma.
A Donkey Dilemma.
Andrew Dodarsky is a good one. Addiction is a dilemma between these two different parts of yourself. The part of you who really wants to do it and has a good reason for it, and the part of you who doesn't think you should do that drug or behavior.
That's why he's got a PhD.
Any listening smart old ladies would give him good lines.
Yes. All right, bro. I love you.
I love you.
You have a baby coming. He's got to go buy baby products. That's a psychedelic thing, huh? You tripping?
Yeah, I am. And it's great because all these old heads I know have been saying, now's when the real trip begins.
Wow, I see.
Now here we go. Little Dot's going to has already changed everything.
I see. All right, bro. I love you. Thank you. This is our first podcast for the show without a name. Maybe that's it, the show without a name. Anyways, what's your last name again?
Pelger.
I
only tell you five more times.
That's right. The seven times I'm a Christian, then you kill me. With Lex Pelger, live from Astor Place underneath the big fucking black box. Bye.